Wow. So this week's classic episode, we recorded it shortly after the ascendancy of Pope Francis.
Yeah.
Pope of the Catholic Church. And you like how we specified that one? When the current Pope attained this position or was elevated to this seat, there was a proliferation of a certain genre of conspiracy theory concerning an organization, a group known as the Jesuits.
That's correct. It was right after Ratzinger, right? And stuff was just flying all around about who are the Jesuits. And in this episode, we asked that question.
They were the ones that did all the sweeping, right? They swept steps. It was a thing. We'll find out.
Well, in this episode, we are going to explore this group and find out more.
From UFOs to ghosts and government cover-ups, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hello. Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
And I'm Ben.
And this is the stuff they don't want you to know.
Nice, nice. Yeah, we've been working on our budget, and we figured out the best way for us to do the kind of sound effects and music that you listeners have come to know, love, and expect. The best way to get the bang for our buck here is to
just have Matt. Me,
yeah, have Matt do it. Is that cool?
Yeah, that's totally fine.
That's also one of your. One of your favorite phrases to hear as an editor, right? Or as we call them, predators here. It's one of your favorite things to hear when someone says, oh, we'll fix it, you know.
In post?
In post.
Yeah, that's a great tactic. Good way to save money.
Just kick the can a little further down the road. But if we are talking about money, then this makes me think of an interesting point that we didn't really touch on in our videos this week. The Jesuits are doing pretty well financially.
Well, yeah, Ben. What's the best way to acquire wealth? The most efficient way to acquire wealth as a group or a person?
Oh, well, to be a nonprofit or a religious organization, something exempt from taxation in some countries.
That's really good. You know another way?
What's that?
To have wealth given to you or passed down to you from generation upon generation upon generation upon generation.
Mm-hmm.
And the group we're talking about today has been around for a while.
Yes. Today, ladies and gentlemen, we are talking about the Society of Jesus, otherwise known as the Jesuits. One thing that we found very interesting, both Matt and I, was that as soon as the current Pope, as we record this, became the actual Pope, there was this huge resurgence of rumors and conspiracy theories about the Society of Jesus. And I don't know about you, man, but I had no idea that this was a long running concept, you know?
Sure.
So what do we know about the Jesuits? Let's start with the history.
So to start with the Jesuits, let's look at the founder, Ignatius of Loyola. Now, this guy was a soldier in the 1500s, and he was wounded by a cannonball that broke one of his legs pretty horribly. And well, it kind of led to the founding because of his spiritual findings when he was injured. And we'll talk about that a little later.
Mm-hmm.
But Ignatius himself was born October 23rd, 1493. His name at that time was Inigo López de Loya.
He was not always the most godly man, right?
He was a warrior, man.
Right. It's a very different cast in that system. Now, the battle we mentioned in the videos where he was wounded was the Battle of Pamplona, which occurred in 1521. Now, during this process, he was very close to death.
Yeah, it was pretty grim. If you get injured in your legs, especially by a cannonball back in the day, there's not much that can be done for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is before the advent of modern medicine, what we would call modern medicine. Mm-hmm. So He survived, but he always would have a limp despite several surgeries. And when they did surgeries, back in ye old 1520s, there was an anesthetic. I mean, there was booze.
Yeah, bite this leather.
Bite this leather, yeah. He read a book while he was recovering. It took a very long time, and it was a book called De Vita Christi, a commentary on the life of Jesus Christ and on the Gospels. When we're looking at this, what's weird is that it's like this mixtape of 60 different other Christian writers' opinions about the Gospels.
Yeah, and this book really triggered his conversion, his religious conversion. And he says that he had visions during this time.
Yep.
That were, you know, leading him in this direction. And in 1523, he made a pilgrimage to the Holy Land. But he wasn't allowed to stay for more than a few days, and they kind of shipped him back off to Europe.
Right, yeah, the situation's pretty unsafe. You know, he's limping like a madman. And the situation, by the way, we have the benefit of retrospect, the situation was unsafe for everyone there. It wasn't just, you know, some group of totally innocent Europeans sitting around the Middle East. There were some hard cases on both sides. And they thought he should not be there. He studied at several universities for the next 11 years, Barcelona, Alcalá, Salamanca, Paris. And in 1534, he gets his crew together. I don't think they called them crews back then. He gets his group of friends and some followers, and they take two vows. They vow to commit themselves to poverty and chastity.
Now, those are two very important reoccurring themes that we'll see in the vows and the things that are held sacred within the Society of Jesus. Now, at this point, they did something interesting to me, at least. They went to Rome and went directly to the Pope, to Pope Paul III, and they offered their services to him. Like, I imagine that, being a Pope, and then this group of guys walk up and are like, "Hello, Pope. We just want to do everything for you, anything you need." And they seem to have this interesting slant on security.
Yeah, their idea is that they will be directly answerable only to the Pope and only to the head of their order, who they call the Superior General, or whom they call the Superior General. So in 15... Pope Paul III, by the way, is down for this.
Yeah.
So in 1540, Ignatius of Loyola officially founds the Society of Jesus, and he's got the Pope co-signing him. So he writes simple rules for his order. No specific form of dress, which was a little bit controversial at the time. No regular commitment to attend particular services. You know, some other orders have a fairly specific schedule, for lack of a better word. And Jesuits, as they came to be called, are free to move fast wherever they're needed. And that means that if today Pope Francis contacts the Jesuit order and says, "I need people to do X, Y, or Z," then they want to have people ready to go.
Yeah, mobile and active at all times.
Yeah, and this goes back to, now you'll recall there are some very important events in Christian history during this time. The Jesuits were already at the Pope's side as like his cabinet and council way back during the Council of Trent.
Now, here's the crazy thing. By the end of Loyola's life, around 1556, this group has grown from just his small group of friends that went to talk to the Pope to over 1,000 members. And that's some pretty huge growth, especially for the time.
Right. They are mainly at this point in Europe, where the task of the order is teaching and arguing against the Protestant cause. But they're also going outside of the West, my friend, to Latin America, to India. The idea is that they will aggressively, assertively proselytize to the great unwashed.
Yeah. And they're putting up churches in these places. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Some really interesting exploration that they're doing.
Right. And they have a debatable, at times controversial, involvement. Of course, students of history will recall that the Catholic Church's involvement, for good and for ill, in areas across the world during the European expansion. But Matt, something that is interesting to me that you earlier mentioned is that you said this was sort of a military order.
Well, yeah, they're focused on security. So they kind of come to be known as this military, let's say, arm, or like the right arm of the Catholic Church. And they use their power and influence in that way. And you may even hear these guys, the Jesuits, called God's soldiers, which is pretty interesting, or even God's Marines. And officially this is because Ignatius, you know, he was a soldier. That's his background. That's what he was good at. It kind of gave him, let's say, this organizational ability and experience that you wouldn't usually find in someone at this level or doing this kind of work. And then the order starts to just expand across the planet. They're going to Brazil, Japan, all over the place.
It's the world tour.
It is. And, okay, so this loyalty that they have, deep-rooted loyalty to the papacy, it's kind of problematic for other groups. And the Jesuits are seen as dangerous by a lot of other people.
Right, inside and outside the church. And let's spend some time here, because if you think about it, it does make sense. Imagine you live in Japan and you all of a sudden have these Europeans, never seen a European before. What the heck is going on there? They come in and they say, you know, this is our religion. We're here to teach you to read like civilized people. And of course, you being Japanese say, you guys should learn to read like civilized people and speak Japanese. But it's strange because their allegiance is to another European that you as a Japanese person have never, ever met and probably won't. And they are answerable only to this guy, not to you, not to your authorities, not to anybody else.
To the head of a religious order.
Right. And for people within the church and other orders, this is even stranger because you know how you've seen cop movies or TV, like procedural crime shows, mm-hmm. right? Where there's always this scene when the local sheriff is mad that the federal agent is coming in and busting his balls.
This is my jurisdiction now.
Mm-hmm. No, this is an FBI case.
Oh, you know, this is the CDC in here.
ATF here, just want to check if there's any tobacco. Is this a tobacco-related crime or alcohol, maybe?
You're going to have to intercede. CIA, don't tell anyone. We're not supposed to function inside the U.S., but we're taking over.
Yeah, exactly. So this kind of game, and this is similar to what happens when a Jesuit order, Jesuit representatives on some sort of mission interact with local Catholic authorities. There can be this weird thing where you say, well, I am the priest of this church or this community, and it's my job to do X. And the Jesuits come in and say, big guy, we were talking to Paul. We just call him Paul. And we're gonna take it from here.
Well, and they had this extra emphasis on mission work and mm-hmm. education work, which kind of put them at the fringes of, I don't know what you would call it, but where Catholicism really was holding sway. Mm-hmm. So they were kind of this weird front lines, strong arm power. But at the same time, we're focusing on education and we're just doing mission work here. It's cool, guys.
Right. They weren't razing villages to the ground. They mm-hmm. were much more likely to assimilate if they could and work with the existing power structures of a place, which later became a problem. But anyway, for all of these reasons, and these are reasons, they were often the victims of rumors, speculation, accusations. Notice I didn't say wild accusations. I just said accusations.
Yeah, Ben. And it's kind of their fault.
What do you mean?
Well, they invented this system called casuistry. It offered loopholes for all sorts of really not good things.
Oh, okay. So it's all right to lie if it's for the good of the church. It's really helping to spread the truth of the gospel. Therefore, it's a lie in service of the truth. Therefore, I'm not really in trouble. Stuff like that.
Yeah. Good things like that.
Right. And for an example of the rumors that they would have, a guy in France named Blaise Pascal wrote a piece called provincial letters exposing what he said were abuses by the Jesuits. And then other places, pretty much all in Europe, there were controversies over Jesuit rites, theological disputes, and their close adherence to Rome, you know?
And, okay, so let's just go back to about how these guys are out on the fringes. So a lot of people didn't see them in the way that maybe they would have liked to be perceived, because they're not working with any local groups, right? At least from a top-down perspective, from where they get their orders. They get their orders from way over there in Rome, just the Pope and then their own general. They also worked with suppressed Catholic communities that were under, at that time, Protestant rule.
Yeah, that's a real conspiracy, too.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're living in a, let's say, an area where there is Protestant rule, and then you're this tiny little Catholic community that's existing in there, the Jesuits have your back, man. I mean, and that's a cool thing to know, I guess, at the time.
Yeah, you meet. They had people meeting in secret to conduct services, and there was a pretty good YouTube summation I saw on this. I wish I could remember the guys' names, but there is a Jesuit YouTube channel where they have members of the order answering questions, explaining things, and they have a great video about the idea of Jesuit conspiracy theories, where they talk about how there would be these little closets or secret hideaways for priests, and so this, they argue, gave rise to many of the later theories about the Jesuit world order or something, because people would look at these houses and say, oh, what's up with that little hidden closet space? And they would say, oh, that's where we, you know, put the Jesuit priest. And that's a weird thing to say to people.
Because we had to take communion and we didn't have anybody.
And you know those Protestants always barging in, looking for communion opportunities. Anyway, so the Jesuits gain a lot of influence, and this is, as you said, because they are educators and they are establishing schools that at a time when there's not, you know, a really feasible public school system. So they're getting the kids of the wealthy, the kids of the influential, and they're molding young minds. They're winning hearts and minds.
It's quite brilliant. If you look back at it.
We should start a school. So church officials become increasingly concerned about the power of the Society of Jesus. They are in the high circles, the courts. You know, people have what they would call like their court Jesuit and stuff.
The court Jesuit?
I don't know, but you see what I'm saying.
I see exactly what you're saying. So all of these fears and rumors kind of culminated on July 21st, 1773, when Pope Clement XIV dissolved the order.
Oh, man. That's tough.
Well, yeah. It's pretty crazy, but by that point, it had already been officially abolished in a couple other places, France, Spain. I think there might have been a couple more. But Clement claimed that he was doing this only as a move to make peace within the church, because there was a lot of tension at the time.
I see. So he said nothing personal, for the good of the family.
We're just going to calm it down for a little bit. You guys aren't officially the Jesuits anymore.
But that didn't last for long, right? In 1814, the society was restored, and everybody remember the name Clement XIV, because we're going to come back to him. But that's, you know, these are some of the controversies, some of the history of Jesuits. What's going on with them today?
Well, they have a website. That's a good thing, a good start. From their official website, this is a quote. With close to 17,000 plus priests and brothers worldwide, we are the largest male religious order in the Catholic Church. We are pastors, teachers, and chaplains. We are also doctors, lawyers, astronomers, among many other roles in church and society. In our varied ministries, we care for the whole person, body, mind, and soul. And especially in our education ministries, we seek to nurture men and women for others.
Now, as members of a religious order, the Jesuits take three vows. None of them are the fake vow that is all over the internet, as far as we know. Their three vows are poverty, chastity, and obedience. And when you are fully initiated into the order, there's a fourth vow of obedience, specifically in regard to the worldwide mission of bringing the world closer to Christ.
Yeah. And that last one is just that kind of vow. It's very serious in this context, but every religion has that same goal, I would argue.
Well, yeah, most religions in some way proselytize, but not all. Most religions, I think, either proselytize or attempt to maintain an insular coherence, although that's a little bit overwritten for me to say it that way. You know what's weird is right as I was reading that, my energy was going up and I felt like an advertisement on a radio station, you know, where they're like, the first ever Jesuit Pope, Pope Francis. Sorry, guys. Those are advertisements we hear all the time for clubs in Atlanta.
Oh, God.
And I heard one coming in. But yeah, but it is a huge, unprecedented event. And it's one of the reasons that so many people have been coming out of the woodwork saying, you know, the thing about the Jesuits is blah, 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 blah. Which leads us to, Matt, my favorite part of the show. Let's talk about some of these theories.
Here's where it gets crazy?
Yes, Matt. Here's where it gets crazy. But first, we have something that I need to ask you about.
Uh-oh. All right.
All right, man. I'm going to level with you. So you're more savvy than I am about the internet and podcasts and all the other things that people do, you know, in their free time. And I have a problem because I want to read more, but I don't have too much time to read. I'm always like in the car driving, working out, humble brag, but right, whatever. But
well, hey, I got a solution for you.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, there's no buts about this. There's this thing called audible.com. Have you ever heard of this?
Maybe.
So Ben, at audible.com, you can download over 150,000 audiobooks so that you can, you know, you can work out as much as you want. You could go driving. You could go to, I don't know, where you want to go to? Las Vegas?
Well, yeah, usually.
Well, heck, man, you could listen to like at least two full audiobooks. Like,
so I've got a question. Audiobook. What is this, kind of book for people's ears?
That's exactly what it is.
All right. Well, I'm back up to speed. And it's a good thing because I have a lot of stuff to check out here. You guys know, if you are longtime listeners of the show, that Matt and I have always enjoyed recommending books. And as we were looking through Audible today, we were trying to find some recommendations for stuff you could get, because since there are over 100,000 choices, you got a lot to wade through. And we found something that we think you will enjoy if you enjoy history, a little bit of skullduggery, a little bit of conspiratorial stuff. It's called
The Jesuit and the Skull, Teilhard de Chardin, Evolution and the Search of Peking Man.
Yeah, so this goes back to December 1929. In a cave near Peking, a group of anthropologists and archaeologists, including a young French Jesuit priest named Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, I can't do it as well as Matt can. Anyway, they uncover a pre-human skull. It quickly becomes known around the world as the Peking Man, and it was acclaimed as the missing link between erect hunting apes and Cro-Magnons. It also became a provocative piece of evidence in the roiling debate over creationism versus evolution.
So guys, if you want this, or if you're interested in any of this, go to audiblepodcast.com/stufftheydontwantyoutoknow. Yeah, that's our huge show name right there at the end. And you can get your free Audible download. You can get a free one of these. You can download The Jesuit and the Skull right now if you want to.
It doesn't have to be The Jesuit and the Skull. You can get any one of these books. This is just one that we thought was interesting and that we are probably going to download. And, you know, man, if you have to type out that whole web address, audiblepodcast.com/stufftheydontwantyoutoknow, I feel like you are owed a book for
that. That's right. That is right. We appreciate it, and I'm sure Audible appreciates it.
Well, just let us know if you guys have a book that you would like us to recommend to the rest of the listening audience out here. And now, the moment that at least I've been waiting for. I don't know if we all have.
Yeah, I have been.
Okay, good. Let's get weird with it. Let's talk about some of this crazy stuff we're alluding to. Jesuits, Matt, have been accused of being assassins, of killing everybody from dissident priests to actual popes and even U.S. presidents. What?
Yeah, what indeed. Okay, so let's talk about a couple of these, Ben. Let's go back to Pope Clement the 14th that we spoke about earlier.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, you remember he signed those documents and the Jesuits were dissolved officially?
Yeah, 1773 or something.
Well, you know, just, I mean, I guess it happens. He fell ill, just got a little sick, and he died. And according to a lot of legends, his last words were, quote, "I am dying. It is a very dangerous thing to attack the Jesuits."
Yeah, it's according to Solving the Mystery of Babylon the Great by a guy named Edward Hendry. And what's strange about this is the timing, because the Pope Clement the 14th passed away in September of that year. And it was during the summer of that year that he dissolved the order. And you'll see various bits of evidence or alleged evidence about this, but it's interesting. One that's a little further out there too is Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
This idea dates back as far back as 1886 when a guy named Charles Chiniqui wrote 50 Years in the Church of Rome, alleging that the Catholic Church killed Abraham Lincoln.
Wow.
Why though? People dismiss the claim today, at least for Lincoln, but not so much for Clement.
Yeah. The Clement claim, due especially because of the timeline, like you just said, seems to be a little more interesting to people and maybe have a little more weight. It should also be noted that John Wilkes Booth was not a Catholic.
Ah, okay. John Wilkes Booth, the assassin of Abraham Lincoln. So that's interesting, the assassination stuff. And I'm hoping that I can get some more primary sources to figure out what the story is with Clement 14. I mean, make no mistake, the idea that the Jesuits would ever assassinate a pope seems very strange and against their charter. And
it's exactly opposite.
Right. Yeah, it's literally the opposite. So this is dismissed in the mainstream categorically. There are not, you know, historians or professors who say, well, yeah, they killed him, but don't tell anybody, all right?
But I would say, you know, if you just got dissolved and you want to still be the Jesuits, if you take one pope out, guess what happens? Another pope comes in.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I'm still, again, looking into this, but we'd like to hear what you think, readers, and why. And that's just one conspiracy theory about Jesuits. There's the other one, that they actively work to subvert world governments to Catholicism.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, Ben. It kind of already happened in South America, at least.
Ah, yes, when the Europeans began colonizing and in some cases terrorizing native people of South America specifically, Jesuits did actively work to win people over to Catholicism.
But again, a lot of these claims rise up when there's a lot of anti-Jesuit sentiment at the time.
Yeah, or anti-Catholic sentiment. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. I was talking to some friends of ours that are a little bit older, and they were telling me about the big controversy when JFK was elected president, especially in Boston. You know, him being Catholic, a lot of this stuff came up, you know, and they would say, oh, well, now the United States just works for the Pope, because the president is Catholic.
Oh, man. Well, okay, so here is one of the most important ones for me. This right here stems from the alleged oath, the secret oath that has been around the internet that we talked about, that the Jesuits can and will commit any number of sins and or crimes according to their secret oaths, including actively lying about this right here.
Ah, so the oath is literally stuff they don't want you to know. It's okay to lie about the oath where you say it's okay to lie.
Yeah.
Little bit of tautology.
That goes to that secret oath that we discuss.
Oh, yeah. This comes from a work called the Moneda Secreta, which I am probably mispronouncing. And we found some people who made a fairly good case that this was a forgery, but it's a forgery that almost reads like satire. It's that far out there. And you can find out more about that in our video in both of our videos, that came out this week about the Jesuits. And then there's the idea that, of course, if the Pope tells them to do something, they do it and it does not matter what it is. So the Pope could say, hey, kill that guy, and they would say, cool. Or, you know,
well, they'd probably go, ooh, really? All right.
That's the idea, right? And then we should differentiate which popes we're talking about, right? Because there's another one, right?
Well, you got the Pope.
The real Pope.
Yeah, the Pope, the one that exists. And then you got the Black Pope.
Which is a nickname given to the Superior General, the leader of the Jesuit order. In a earlier video, Matt, you and I talked about Pope John Paul I, right?
Mm-hmm. Sorry, Ben. I just have these images of that new show on Adult Swim, Black Jesus, but mm-hmm. with Black Pope. And I just think that would be funny. And Adult Swim, you mm-hmm. should make a sequel.
Now, the name Black Pope in this case is not a name that the Catholic Church necessarily condones. It's a bit of a pejorative.
Mm-hmm.
It's not exactly a compliment. It started out as a nickname that came from the plain black robes that the Jesuit order would wear, but it also came, and I think it stems mainly from Protestants in the 16th, 17th century saying that this guy, the Superior General, the Jesuits, was a shadow pope, which I think sounds even cooler than Black Pope, who may wield too much influence on the working of the Vatican and the working of local governments. In our Pope John Paul I video, we talk about the conspiracy theory that John Paul I was assassinated at the order of the Black Pope because he was cleaning up the financial dealings of the church, which for decades, if not centuries, have been notoriously, I'm not going to say corrupt, but I will say obscure.
Okay.
Obscured.
Okay, I'll go with that.
Like hidden, the fancy word would be occult. Because a cult just means a hidden thing, right? So these finances, notoriously inscrutable, and the guy who was delving into them to clean them up, he dies. You've got to check out the video if you haven't yet. It's a very interesting story.
Agreed. So let's look at behind the scenes with some of these theories that are out there. This here's where it gets crazy stuff. Well, it's kind of sad, Ben, but a lot of this stuff, it seems at least to be religious discrimination.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Just because it's a group that is easy to, sow mistrust about. And it makes sense.
They're really powerful at the time too.
Mm-hmm.
Super powerful group. And, you know, I think there's a lot of fear when there's power involved.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I can't even handle being the first car in line at a traffic stop.
You don't like it?
I'm a megalomaniac at that point. Are you kidding? I'm Kanye West of the boulevard meets the avenue.
When my van hits that front line, I'm like, I'm going to go slow and you're going to like the music I'm playing really loudly with my music down.
Is that true?
Yes.
That was you, man.
All the time.
So we know that there are examples of this, too. What we're seeing is that these kind of accusations have gone from pretty much the late 1500s, all the way from World War II, where, for example, Nazis also used anti-Jesuit propaganda to try to discredit the Catholic Church in Germany. And, you know, honestly, if we're being completely honest, Matt, it is true from everything we found that the Society of Jesus has at different times certainly been hungry for power.
Oh, yeah.
And garnered political influence.
Yeah, and, you know, they had this emphasis on education, so it was probably viewed that, you know, they're trying to just completely convert massive swaths of whatever country you're in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can see how that would be a little scary.
Well, there was an interesting, I guess at the time, it was a debacle in China when the Society of Jesus was doing mission work there because they assimilated so well into the local culture and the circles of power that the controversial choice they made, which the Pope did not care for, was that they said, okay, well, if you were Christian and you still want to participate in traditional Confucian rites, that's fine with us because it's a cultural thing. we think it's cultural. We don't think it's religious. You know, our guys can participate in it too. And they got in quite a bit of trouble for that. Mm. And also, you know, it shows dissension in the ranks. But with all this said, I don't know about you. This is one of my favorite parts of the show, right up there with the let's talk about the crazy stuff. It's where I get to ask you what you think about this whole thing, man.
You love it, don't you? You love making me sit over here and think really hard.
No, I'm just asking.
Yeah. Well, man, I don't know. This is a tough one for me because, you know, anytime you bring religion in, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful to anyone, but I think about power. And I think about a lot of times great amounts of wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you add this group that in my eyes at this point doesn't seem to be as evil as a lot of the rumors and conspiracy theories would say, and not even close to that. I would say that they probably do have a lot of power still, even now.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's the largest male order of the Catholic Church still, right?
And, you know... As far as the vow goes, you got me on that one. I couldn't tell you one way or the other, but everything that we found seems to point to it being a forgery.
Mm. Yeah, I know that we ruffled some feathers a little bit when we said, this thing is a forgery, but if we find something and we have compelling evidence that it is true or not true, then it is sort of our job. We can't, and by sort of, I mean definitely, actually, our job. We can't pretend that we don't know that kind of thing. I'm interested in this, too. This was really a sticky subject for us because, as you said, we typically avoid religion. Now, I know that there are listeners out there saying, wait, you guys have done a number of videos on different things about the Catholic Church. But typically what we're covering when we do that would be something like a political activity.
Yeah, an event.
An assassination or an explanation about, you know, the Vatican secret archives, which are a real thing, but don't exactly mean what you think they mean.
So, Ben.
Yes.
You kind of gave an overview, but you got to tell me what you think.
I am certain that over the history of this organization, there have been various laws broken. And when I say this organization, I mean specifically the Society of Jesus at times, because, you know, it's been around for so long and there have been so many people and they have successfully paved the way for a lot of things, especially education. I mean, Jesuit schools are still amazing today, right? But clearly, you can't have an organization of that size, of that power, for that long without somebody doing something wrong. It's just the nature of human beings. Now, as for whether the Society of Jesus is out to embark upon a global crusade to take over the world and make every single person Catholic, I think that's a little bit... I don't know. That's like, it just doesn't make sense to me because if that were the case, then given that they've been around for so long, we would have seen more of that. What we're seeing now are, overall quite a few people dedicating their lives to traveling to some pretty rough places in the world and, trying to educate people and raise money to meet survival needs. And these guys, you know, when they join, they take the vow of poverty and chastity, both of which I would personally have a hard time subscribing to.
Oh, sure.
So I respect people, you know, I respect people when they have a code of ethics, but we walked away from this video series and I just want to know more. So I've ordered a couple more books actually about the Jesuits and I'm going to be extensively reading them because I just want to know. There's so many stories, and we found a few that were true, right? And we found a few that we think are likely false, but we're barely scratching the surface.
Yeah, not even close.
Not even
close.
You
haven't made a dent, my friend, but it's okay. We may come back. Let's do a little more research. What do you say?
All right, I'm on board if you are, my friend.
So, guys, what do you think about the Jesuits? What do you think about the Society of Jesus and all of the things we've been talking about today? You can talk to us on Facebook. We are Conspiracy Stuff there. We are at Conspiracy Stuff on Twitter. You can also go to our webpage, stufftheydontwantyoutoknow.com, and kind of check us out over there.
And that's the end of this classic episode. If you have any thoughts or questions about this episode, you can get into contact with us in a number of different ways. One of the best is to give us a call. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. If you don't want to do that, you can send us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.